Sorry, I didn't quite see you there. Hello, hello. Yes, sorry, I'm just, as many of you may know, it's my hobby to collect Oriental religions. It's my aim to have gone through as many Oriental religions as I possibly can by the end of my life. And so, to that end, I became a Hindu recently, and in that regard, I was looking at the Times of India matrimonial section for a suitable marriage for my son. I'm quite taken by this one. Looking for well-educated, well-placed boy from respectable family in India or abroad. Girl very pretty, MBA Delhi, born November 74, that's a bit old, 5'5", 55 kilograms, engaged in high-end chocolate making, South Delhi-based family of engineers, gainfully employed. And then it's her email address. So I quite like that one. And then there's this, if you see them here, you see. And then there's alliance invited by high status and reputed industrialist Kahatra Arora family of Chandigarh for their beautiful, talented, smart and cultured daughter, born August 1984, 155 centimetres, pursuing an M.Tech in the USA, completing degree in December 2021. Match should be handsome, highly qualified, with pleasing personality from well-established, reputed business industrialist family. Oh, I wonder if freelance academic will do. I don't know, I have to look into that more. What else have we got here? There's loads of stuff. I mean, there's a lot. Business family of Delhi seeks alliance for well-settled, highly educated, professionally qualified, vegetarian, teetotaler boy. Well, that's no good. Although I suppose I could put an advert for my son. But, yeah, this is certainly worth thinking about. And one of the reasons it's worth thinking about is that I was reading a very interesting article recently. It's very interesting research. And what seems to be the case is that we are evolved to pursue arranged marriages. We are evolved to have our parents and to a lesser extent our friends arrange our marriages for us. We are not evolved for the kind of socio-sexual situation that we are in at the moment, where people use these apps online and they swipe left or swipe right or whatever it is to make our own decisions about our marital relations. We're not evolved to that. We're evolved for our parents to select our partners for us, at least to a very significant degree. And therefore, were a situation to manifest where we stop doing that, then what you would expect is an evolutionary mismatch whereby we'd make very bad decisions. Let me take this tea cosy off my head and tell you a bit more what I mean. So basically, there's a paper, it's very interesting, it's called Sexual Selection Under Parental Choice by a Greek psychologist, well, whatever he is, working in Cyprus, called Menelaos Apostolou. And what they did was they took 16 different pre-industrial societies, and they looked at how the dynamics of marriage works in these societies. And they found that parental choice in all these pre-industrial societies, so in societies that are still subject to Darwinian selection, was dominant. So that means that parental choice plays a part in sexual selection. Now, what is sexual selection? Sexual selection is a process, of course, there's natural selection, where that's the idea that you pass on your genes, and those that are the most fit pass on their genes. And then there's the sexual selection, which is a situation where those that are regarded as the fittest by the opposite sex are selected for. Now, and therefore more likely to pass on their genes. Now, men and women sexually select for different things. A man, because he has nothing to lose from the sexual encounter, it's basically in his interests to copulate with as many people as he can, as quickly as he can, in order to guarantee that some of his genes will be passed on. And that's what he does. And in that situation, the thing to do is to go for females that are young, because they're more likely to be fertile, and who are attractive, because having a beautiful face is a sign of good genes. We're meant to have a beautiful face, it tends to be a symmetrical face and a feminine face, and women are meant to have symmetrical feminine faces. This means they're highly fertile, and it means that if you have a symmetrical face, you've been able to maintain a symmetrical phenotype in under attack from all kinds of illnesses and diseases and viruses and whatever, and this means you have a good immune system. If you have a bad immune system, you'll be using proportionately more of your biogenetic resources to fight off disease, and consequently you won't be able to maintain a symmetrical phenotype. So beauty is an honesty signal of genetic health. And so men tend to be attracted to this. They want women who are beautiful and women who are young. The female does have something to lose from sexual encounter because she can become pregnant. And so, of course, what this means is that she's more likely to survive if the male, if the person that gets her pregnant, will stick around, will invest in her, and has the resources to invest in her. And therefore, although she does sexually select for a man who is tall, for example, physical traits, a man who is tall because he's better, like, more likely to win fights and can protect her, also growing, being able to be tall is a sign of good genetic health. You've got sufficient good immune system to be able to reach your phenotypic height. You're not wasting resources fighting off disease and thus ending up short. So they do select for tall. They do select for handsome. They do select for muscular. These kinds of traits in the same way that men do. But they are less interested in physical things than men. They are more interested in psychological traits because they want a man who will be able to look after them. And because if they have a man who will be able to look after them, then that man will and stick around, then they will be more likely to survive and their offspring will be more likely to survive. And this is why females, to a greater extent than males, tend to sexually select for status. They're interested in a man's status. They're interested in his wealth. They're interested in those kinds of traits. And they're also interested, therefore, indirectly, in psychological traits, in traits which imply the ability to gain status, such as intelligence, such as a certain kind of personality. So that's really the essence of it. These are the two dynamics of sexual selection. Men are selecting, although they are, of course, interested in a woman's background and her status and her wealth and this kind of stuff as well. That is, of course, of interest to them. What they are primarily interested in is youth and beauty. Women are interested in what a man looks like and how handsome he is and that kind of thing, but what they are more interested in is his status, his background, and how basically his ability to maintain status, because if he has higher status, then he'll be able to help her out more, give her more resources, and under Darwinian conditions, wealth, resources, status predicts being able to pass on your genes, because your children can better protect it and they'll have more access to food and whatever, and so they're more likely to pass on their genes. So that's how sexual selection works. Now, you can see that there will be something of a disconnect between what the children want and what their parents might want. Now, parents are obviously going to have an interest in who their children partner up with. Why? Well, because the parents are, your children are 50% genetically the same as you, your grandchildren are 25% genetically the same as you are. So obviously, your grandchildren and the survival of your grandchildren is something that's of interest to you. Equally, your survival is of interest to you. You, even independent of your children surviving and your grandchildren surviving, you want to survive. You want to live so that you can invest more resources in your children and grandchildren and make sure they pass on their genes, or perhaps even so that you can have more children or whatever, or just to follow the basic instinct to live. So parents have their own separate desires, and you can see how consequently they will take an interest in mating and they will want to control the kind of person with whom a person mates. And we know that they do that historically because a big analysis of 190 hunter-gatherer societies has shown that the main, in fact, overwhelmingly, it is arranged marriage that is engaged in. It's arranged marriage that is pursued. Now, you can see how this kind of thing would work in terms of making a balance between the different traits which a son or a daughter of yours would desire. Now, beauty, obviously, that's a good thing. That's important. Beauty in a female is important. The man will be attracted to beauty. Beauty implies she has good genes. She's genetically healthy. Her children are going to be genetically healthy. So obviously, you know, that's a good thing. But equally, her background is a good thing as well. It's a good thing because if she has a wealthy background, then the son will potentially inherit some of those resources, therefore his children will inherit those resources, therefore his children will be wealthier, and therefore under conditions of Darwinian selection, where we know that in the 1600s, for example, the richer 50% of a society had double the surviving fertility, the complete fertility, the surviving number of children, than the poorer 50% did, because it was so important that it was wealth that predicted that you passed on your genes, because it meant you had a healthier environment and better food and all this kind of thing. Obviously, therefore, the background of the wife is important as well. And under conditions of Darwinian selection, it is important to get that right. Yes, the man is going to be more interested in the woman's beauty. But at the extreme, what that means is a very, very wealthy man from a very high status background who will be selected for by a very low status but beautiful female. Now, that's not only a problem. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, can happen. Now, that's not only a problem potentially for him, it's not only a rash decision where he's letting his heart dominate his mind because he finds her so attractive, because it means that he will have less resources potentially and his children will have less resources. It's a problem for his parents as well, because his parents will realise, firstly, that their grandchildren will have less resources and will be less likely to survive, and secondly, that the son will have less resources with which to look after them, when they are elderly and infirm. And so obviously it's in the parents' interests to try and push him in the direction of a match that's less extreme, to push him in the direction of a match that is based around a combination of resources and the importance of resources, but also, yes, the importance of good genes and good genetic health, to get the balance right in the different evolutionarily adaptive traits. Now, in other words, what that means in terms of what we call life history strategy is it's in the parents' interests to push the son in a direction that is what we might call a slow life history strategy. A fast life history strategy is that all your energy and interest and investment is in sex, and therefore to a degree genetic quality, but basically sex. A slow life history strategy is that you're less interested in sex and you're more interested in nurture. And by extension, nurture is associated with intelligence. It's associated with impulse control, because if you have higher impulse control, you're better at nurturing. It's associated with agreeableness, altruism, because if you're more agreeable, you're better at nurturing. And so you get this spectrum that all humans exist on, where you're very interested in sex and put all your energy into sex, or you're very interested in nurture and put all your energy into nurture, that being a slow life history strategy. In relatively advanced, well, in all societies to a certain extent, but the more advanced the society, the more this is important. A slow life history strategy and its corollary, intelligence, is associated with doing well, associated with high socioeconomic status, and therefore, under Darwinian conditions, with passing on your genes. A fast life history strategy, i.e. that you only invest in sex and you invest nothing in nurture and you just live fast and die young, that is associated with success to a greater extent in an unstable, primitive environment which is unpredictable, in which you could be killed at any moment, and so you just live for the moment. As you move away from that to a more complex society, then a slow life history strategy becomes important. Now, what young people will tend to do, the characteristics associated with a slow life history strategy are things like high impulse control, high agreeableness, and high raw intelligence, high IQ. Now, those things tend to increase with age. As people get older, they become higher in those traits. So parents will be higher on average at least to a certain age in those traits than their children. And they will therefore try and steer their children in this more slow life history strategy sort of direction, where the man should not just go for the pretty girl from the poor background who could be a complete tart, and could love him, who could cuckold him or whatever. I.e. be ruled by his heartless desire for sex. Steer him away from that towards the girl who may well be more homely and less attractive and whatever, but has more resources and is probably higher in agreeableness, higher in conscientiousness, higher in intelligence, and less likely to cuckold him, and therefore more likely to ensure that both of them pass on their genes. That is what the parents are doing, and that is what they have done historically under Darwinian conditions. There's also, of course, a selfish element to it on their part. If he marries into a wealthy background, there will be more resources for them. Their son will have more resources, and there'll be more resources for them. But you can see how this works. And equally, you have the other way around. If you have a woman who goes for a very, very high status man, he's got lots of wealth, that's what she's inclined to go for. But there are problems with him as well. Perhaps he's old and therefore unlikely to have any children, or perhaps he's got lots of children already and therefore he's unlikely to want any more children, or there are these kinds of things as well. Then again, what sensible parents will do is try and steer them towards the happy medium. And this is historically, therefore, why it is good for parents, and not just parents, but friends, to be involved in a marriage match, because it ensures that people don't make stupid mistakes, which when they're young, they are more inclined to do. And this, you think about it yourselves, anyone watching this, or if you've had a girlfriend before you got married or whatever, what a mistake it would have been to marry the girlfriend that you were going out with when you were 16 or whatever. She probably would have been disastrous for you. But in times of old, that's exactly what you could have done. You could have married her. Now, parents would have steered people away from that normally towards a more sensible match. Now, of course, what this means is they become a force in evolution. The child wants to marry normally, or the young person wants to marry for these extreme reasons, for beauty or for status or whatever, or certainly for beauty, for a fast life history strategy sort of person to be inclined to marry, to be interested in sex and marry for looks and whatever over financial considerations. And they're evolved to want to do that. The parents have their own evolutionary interests, and therefore there could be an evolutionary battle that will have gone on between children and or young children and parents over thousands of years to ensure that some kind of equilibrium is reached and each of them get their way to some extent. And therefore children will have evolved tactics to hit back against the parents. The parents, of course, can control them until they're reasonably old, manipulation and whatever, and the parents as well. So that's basically the situation. Now, under most of these societies, which Apostolou looked at, of course, there a very large number of them were polygamous. It was 50% of them were polygamous. Or more than 50%, I think it was. What was it now? Yes, at least 50% were polygamous, and very small numbers of them were monogamous. And so what this means, of course, in a polygamous society is because females desire high-status males, and because there are a limited number of high-status males, what tends to happen is you get this complete skewing of the marriage market, whereby high-status males get lots and lots of females, and low-status males get none at all. So in the Bushmen of the Kalahari, for example, 60% of Bushmen males have never married or had any children. And it's the other 40% who monopolise all of the women. So therefore, what this means is that there's lots and lots of males floating around that no one's interested in, and there's these females, and therefore the females are a scarce resource. The females are important. The females will find a male. The males, if you've got a son, well, some of them will do well and some of them won't, and you, whatever. But the females will find some kind of male. There's loads of males out there looking for females. It's disproportionate. Everything works in the female's favour. So you have to ensure that the female gets the best male. And therefore, females are a scarce resource, and therefore parents will control them. And they will exert far more influence over what the female does, the daughter, than what the son does. Also, a daughter is more important because if it's your daughter's child, you can be sure it's your grandchild. Whereas if it's your son's child, you can never be completely sure that it's your grandchild. So it always pays to invest more energy and more resources and more care in your daughter than it does in your son. And this is one of the reasons, I think, why the daughter is often the guardian of the family honour and why the pressure on daughters is higher, because the daughters are basically more important. From a parental perspective, the daughter, you can be certain this is your genes, this is your genetic future, this is your interest. Also, daughters are more inclined to look after their parents anyway because they're higher in agreeableness and conscientiousness and things. And so in every respect, it's much more important that the daughter has a fortuitous match, and therefore parents tend to exert much more pressure and are much more interested in who their daughters marry than in who their sons marry. And and that extreme again, where the handsome dimension versus the wealth dimension. They will do all they can to try and push their daughter in the optimum and correct direction. They'll be very interested, from their perspective, in who that person's marrying in a match that is beneficial to them, to their grandchildren or potential grandchildren, and to their daughter from their perspective. So you end up with this evolutionary battle between the daughter wants and who the daughter is in love with, or who she claims to be in love with, and what the parents want for her. Now, at the extremes, of course, what you then get is a situation where, in certain very, very patriarchal societies, where the daughters are kind of closeted off, basically. The daughters are veiled, the daughters can't be seen in public, the daughters are chaperoned. Everything is done to stop the daughters acting on their own desires, to stop the daughters getting the man that they want, and to compel the daughters to go with the kind of man that the parents want. Now, remember that we are 50% genetically the same as our parents, and a big part of sexual attraction is that you are genetically similar to another person. It's been shown that couples are, on average, the genetic equivalent of third cousins. So what this means is your parents are likely, because they are between them, they are 50% of you genetically, are likely to select a person who is genetically quite similar to themselves and therefore to you. Of course, there's the 50% of each of them in each case, but you know, they'll negotiate it themselves. It will often be the father. In 63% of these societies, the marriage was decided exclusively by the father. So it will render them more similar to the father than the mother, which could be a problem. But even so, on that level, it will work. They will find someone that's genetically quite similar to you, because that's who they'll be attracted to. in terms of the other dimensions to marriage, in terms of the personality and whatever, and the status and whatever, of course what they're going to be interested in is the best possible match, and that means the best balance that they can achieve between genetic health, looks, things like that, and background and wealth and status and whatever. So this is what this would mean, as I say, is that we are evolved for our pair under a long period of time in a patriarchal society. We are evolved for our parents to select our marriage partners, and this is, and to basically control our sexuality, and this is particularly true of females. This is more true of females than it is of males. Now, in this analysis that I told you about of these 16 different societies, 94% of them the marriages were arranged, 63% by the father. In 56% of cases, they very strongly controlled the daughter. In 44% of cases, they were still infants when the marriages were arranged. In only 13% of cases, were girls asked their opinion on the match. Whereas in most cases, the boys were given some kind of opinion. However, in 88% of cases, divorce was possible among these groups, which is interesting because, of course, in a lot of Christian societies, divorce has been very, very difficult until relatively recently. So this then is the situation to which we are evolved. We are evolved to a situation where we are under the control of other people, whether it is our parents or whether it is also to a certain extent, there's research on this in early modern England, Apostolic doesn't look at this, but our friends. So marriages even then did not tend to be a situation whereby you'd go to a bar and you'd get talking to someone and you'd get on. That didn't happen. Things didn't work like that. Sexuality was far more restricted. Girls would, of course, be chaperoned. And so the tendency was for matches to be arranged, not just by parents, but also by friends. And this is interesting as well, because it implies friends have a stake in who you marry. If you marry somebody that has got lots of resources, this will trickle down to your friends. Friends are more genetically similar to each other than two random members of the same population. So friends even have an input, but clearly it's particularly true with parents. The main input is from parents. Parents have a huge stake in who, in particular, their daughter marries, because it's a matter of their genes being passed on, whether their grandparents or grandchildren are genetically healthy, whether their grandchildren have access to resources, which under Darwinian conditions means they're more likely to survive, and whether they, the parents, are more likely to have access to resources and are therefore more likely to survive and are therefore more likely to interfere with their daughter's life and interfere with their grandchildren's life and make sure that their own genes are passed on. So you can therefore see how a situation would develop whereby they would impact sexual selection. It would become a component of sexual selection. The parental element would become an aspect of who we end up marrying. We would be evolved, literally evolved, to operate and to sexually select and to find partners under a situation where our parents are not just interfering, but are heavily directing what we do. And we would therefore evolve techniques to rebel against them in an extreme way, to want the absolute extreme opposite of what they would want, to want the absolute extreme opposite of what, from a genetic perspective, would be sensible. Knowing, or with Darwinian conditions, knowing that they would then kick back against that, wanting the extreme opposite, wanting a situation where perhaps it was entirely based around wealth and where sexual attraction on our part was a minimal consideration, and we would kick back against that and they would push back against that and so on. And under these conditions, a reasonable and evolutionarily adaptive compromise would be reached. So what would happen then if the parental element was taken away? If it collapsed, and it collapsed very quickly, and you went within a period of 150 years from marriages being arranged in the West, or at least partially arranged, to marriages being arranged to some degree by parents and friends, to parents having no influence whatsoever, and people simply meeting random people on the internet and hooking up with them in an entirely sociosexual way, what would happen then? Well, what would happen in the absence of that environmental element of the parents pushing back so that a compromise was reached would be that we would end up with maladaptive desires, which wouldn't be maladaptive if there was something there pushing back against them, i.e. parental control, but in the absence of that, they would be maladaptive. We would end up with maladaptive desires. We would go for people who were bad for us. We would go for people who were genetically dissimilar to us. We would go for people who, without consideration of financial background, or who were genetically unfit or whatever. We would make very, very, very bad decisions indeed. In addition, we would expect, because remember, under these Darwinian conditions, it's been the female that's been under greater parental choice direction than the male. We would expect those conditions to be particularly bad if taken by females. We would expect females to make particularly maladaptive decisions. And consistent with this, at the moment, among intelligent people, if you look at only people that are reasonably intelligent, that have sort of above average IQ, then fertility is lower among females than males. Females are less likely to pass on their genes, i.e. when left to their own devices, with the collapse of patriarchy, with the collapse of these Darwinian conditions of parental direction, then both men and women make maladaptive decisions, which means they end up not passing on their genes, but women make slightly more maladaptive decisions than men do, because the evolutionary pressure on them from parental choice has been greater. And so perhaps that explains what's going on. Perhaps that explains in part why divorce rates are so high, why you get serial monogamy, why you get this complete collapse of normal sexuality that you see with these women selling their bathwater and goodness knows what. It's that a key component to how we engage in relationships, i.e. the direction of a rate of parental choice, of parental pressure, and of arranged marriage has been taken away. But we are evolved for thousands of years under a situation where that pressure was there. So in its absence, we have an evolutionary mismatch and we go bonkers in the nut. So maybe we should go back to a situation where we have newspapers like this, and parents put adverts, and we see how it goes from there. Well, I hope this is a bit of interest, and I would like to thank my very wonderful patron, Oliver Rayner Hills Esquire, who suggested this video and indeed funded it. And I would like to say that if you enjoy this, then please subscribe. Please subscribe on BitChute, because BitChute is the place of freedom where more things can be done and whatever. Whereas this place is entirely anti-truth, if you're watching it on YouTube, I mean. Please follow me on Twitter, and you can, if you want to help me out, you can do so by sending an offline super chat. The link is below, by funding me on Patreon, if you wish, or on Subscribestar particularly, because that's against pro-freedom, so therefore better. I think that's about it. Yes, and I will see you soon, and namaste, and goodbye.